Hello everyone, welcome to the fifth episode of the series of podcasts with IEEE Electron Devices Society Luminaries. As the world's largest professional organization, IEEE plays significant role to enhance the quality of our life. Electron Devices Society, or EDS, encompasses activities involving electron devices, the main enabler for today's digital world. I'm Mohammad Mustafa Hussein, the professor of electrical engineering and computer science of University of California, Berkeley. I play a variety of roles in different capacities within the Electron Devices Society of IEEE. In this series of podcasts, we will be interviewing those EDS members who have made remarkable impacts in our society through their innovations and dedication. Our guest today is someone whose entrepreneurial product is used today by more than 85 million people for testing COVID-19. One of his review papers has been studied, used by thousands of engineers who have made products which have impacted millions of people's lives. Yes, we are talking about Dr. Kurt Peterson. Kurt Peterson received his bachelor's degree with cum laude in electrical engineering from University of California, Berkeley in 1975, he received a PhD in electrical engineering from MIT. Dr. Peterson established a micromachining research group at IBM from 1975 to 1982, during which he wrote the seminal review paper, Silicon as a Mechanical Material, published in the IEEE Proceedings, May 1982. This paper is the most frequently referenced work in the field of micromachining and microelectromechanical systems. Since 1982, Dr. Peterson has co-founded six companies in MEMS technology. Transsensory Devices in 1982, Nova Sensor in 1985, now owned by Amphenol, Cepheid in 1996, acquired by Danaher in 2016, Silicon Time in 2004, acquired by Megachips in Japan, Profusa in 2008, still private, and Verion in 2009, acquired by Qualcomm. How are you doing?
I'm doing just great. I got my vaccination, my first vaccination the other day.
Which one, Moderna or Pfizer?
Moderna.
So the next one is, I guess, 2 weeks after?
It's actually 1 month after, so you have to wait a month.
When we started planning out about this series of podcasts, we really wanted to have someone who has done entrepreneurial leadership throughout his career. And that's why, like, you know, that it is really, really exciting for me. And this episode is going to be exciting for all the audience. How was your childhood?
So I was always into science and engineering. When I was in grade school, I built tic-tac-toe computers, two different computers. I didn't finish them, get them working, but it was fun doing them. I also designed rockets. So I was a big space fan. I'm still a big space fan. I own stock in SpaceX. I designed rockets and just other things. I just had a very engineering and scientific intensive mindset in those days, in those early days.
You went to UC Berkeley.
I went to UC Berkeley.
How was it?
I had a wonderful time at UC Berkeley, and I'm so happy that I still have the opportunity to interact with the various departments there. So I majored in electrical engineering, spent most of my time in Corey Hall, So I had a wonderful time. I really enjoyed being an alumni of UC Berkeley.
Well, after that time, like, you know, the in the Corey Hall is still today, or when we go, because although it's an old building and many of the faculty, they are actually switching to a newer building, it actually gives us the vibe of the college, the university. The students are on the stairs and like they're doing something, and the labs in the level two, they have those microfabrication lab when you enter, and then the robotics lab. So those are really the charm of this building, with along with all the young kids bustling everywhere. So when you graduate, at that point, what really inspired you to think about or choosing your career? Like, you are someone who is free spirited. So what really motivated you to choose your the profession or career, whichever way you would like to put it? I would say passion for you.
So I always like research. I like doing new things. And that's what I did when I did graduate school at MIT. I did some new things, chalcogenide semiconductors. But when I got out of, when I graduated from MIT, I felt that I really wanted to develop technologies that people would use and products that people would use. I get a really big charge out of developing products that, that people use in their daily lives. And that's really why I, after I joined IBM right out of MIT, but I wasn't there for very long until I started doing startup companies. At research, the research division at IBM isn't really a product division. They don't really develop products. And that's really what I wanted to do. So I left IBM to build products that people would enjoy and use.
The seminal paper that you wrote and that has been read, studied, investigated further, and used by thousands, and those thousands have built products, built, developed technologies which have impacted in a positive manner to millions. So tell us about that paper.
So I got into doing mechanical devices on silicon, and then I started researching that field and at the IBM library. And I just found all kinds of very interesting things that people had developed by building mechanical devices on silicon. I think actually when I was job interviewing at IBM, I visited Stanford, and there were some posters in the hallway. One of them was Steve Terry's gas chromatograph on a chip. Another one was Lynn Roylance's accelerometer on a silicon chip. And I was like, wow. You know, mechanical devices on silicon. And then as I was wandering around the building, building 28 at IBM Research, and I saw there was a big ink stain on one of the corridors. And I went and investigated and talked to the people who were in that lab, and they were building inkjet printers using silicon nozzles. Again, another mechanical device. And I'm like, wow. Mechanical devices on silicon. I was just so intrigued with that idea. And so I started building some devices, and I would take them to, we had a SEM facility, and I would take my little mechanical chips to the SEM, and the operator would open up the chamber and put it in. And she was like amazed at like, wow, this is like a little mechanical structure in here. This is totally different than what I normally look at under the SEM. And so people were just getting, you know, very interested in it. And I got very interested in it. And I thought it could be the source for many different kinds of products. And so actually the paper, the IEEE proceedings paper, was actually part of a very large report I wrote for IBM, which proposed all kinds of applications within the IBM product lines for MEMS. And that's how I really got into doing MEMS-based products.
It's so fascinating. We cannot stop talking about just that paper, like, you know, that any micro machining course, any MEMS course, any microfabrication course, anywhere in the world, this paper is always used. And you said that, okay, so there were so many different like works were already done on mechanical component on the silicon, means microstructure. What really inspired you to choose like electron device in general? So this is something that I would like to work on, because you are a space enthusiast. You are someone who actually gets excited with a broad spectrum of scientific phenomena, but you chose electron device. And not only electron device, specifically you chose electromechanical device, which actually bring the other dimension. So what really inspired you for that?
So I think I've always had a sense of how the human interface to computers, basically sensors. So I've always been very interested in sensors. And with sensors, you have some mechanical or environmental effect is being converted into an electronic signal. So that's the whole purpose of a sensor. And also I found that with MEMS and what we called it micro machining at the time, MEMS could also be used for building displays. So people were building those little movable arrays of movable mirrors like the TI digital mirror display. And so MEMS could be used both for sensors and for actuators for both sides of the human machine interface, you know, bringing the signals in using sensors and then giving the data back using displays. So it seemed like a very powerful technology that had applications in many areas that were interfaced with the computer. And I've always been interested in interfaces with computers. I think early on, I in my undergraduate life, I wanted to get into computer science. And then actually I was wandering around the campus one day and I walked into a laboratory where there was a huge stainless steel vacuum chamber with all kinds of widgets coming in and out of it. And I talked to the person there and I said, oh, I wanted to get into computers. And he said, well, I always think of computers as tools that real scientists use to do science. And so actually that sort of changed my mind. I went into science, more science-oriented things. So I'm very interested in electronics, computers, science.
Right. I think many, when we were young, we used to actually break multiple of the radios and torchlights and to see what's really happening, and then, fix them back. Most of the times failed, and then they started to work out. I think it's just a passion, the curiosity-driven passion that drove you in that direction. You have led multiple entrepreneurial activities. You have brought ideas to products, and they have been used by millions of people. So this is a bit challenging question, because if you are being asked to pick one that whose impact you think made the maximum impact, which one that would be, and how, like, if you can share any associated memory with that product or that activity?
So I think that's pretty easy. It's the Cepheid. So Cepheid Gene Expert System. So when I left Nova Sensor, I wanted to start a biotech company, because I wanted to, my son was into biotechnology and medicine. He's a doctor now at the CDC. And I wanted to apply the microfluidics that we had developed a little bit of at NovaSensor to medical devices. And I ran into Alan Northrup, who was doing rapid PCR using silicon devices at the time. And I got this idea of interfacing microfluidics for preparing the sample together with PCR for detecting the target in the sample. And it was just sort of the light bulb went off in my mind. And so we started that company. But I have to say at the same time, that concept is kind of only kind of kicks things off. To really be successful in a company like Cepheid, you need to have all kinds of different disciplines. I really didn't have much biotech background or medical background. And so we hired a bunch of those people, put them in high level positions and just kind of organize the team in the beginning with a very, very clear and succinct vision of having a small cartridge that you put in a machine and it does everything. You put the sample in it and it extracts the DNA from the sample. It mixes the DNA with the reagents necessary to do the polymerase chain reaction. And then it does that reaction and detects the results of that reaction all at the same time. And that's the vision we followed for many years to get the gene expert up and operating. And that's a vision that still is in the company today, 20 years later. And I have to say that actually, I just learned that last year, 2020, Cepheid Systems did 29 million COVID-19 tests. And they're expected to do 56 million tests this year. So that's with COVID-19 alone, not all the other tests that Cepheid has in its catalog now. So it's a very, very exciting, I'm very, very exciting and proud that I was part of the team at Cepheid that did all that work and all that development and that's helping people so much, every day. It's a great satisfaction to me.
Yeah, I just I am supposed to fly out tomorrow. So I just came back from a PCR test. And when you were sharing this story, I could immediately relate that how this is helping us to fight back against a pandemic that has already consumed 2 million people's life all over the world. It is an astonishing number in that sense of 21st century. And that's why I called you that you are not someone who is just an entrepreneur. You lead because you form the team. Even if you don't have the right expertise, you figure out that, okay, get the right people and incentivize them appropriately. So they also feel passion for that. They also think that this is my product. And I think that's the, you can't teach leadership. It's, you have to have something in yourself. And it's an interesting twist because if you did not want to be an engineer or an entrepreneur, what you would want it to be? What would have been your second choice?
Yeah, I can't even think of, I just love being an engineer and an entrepreneur so much. I haven't even thought of that. But I guess I like to travel a lot. Okay. So I just love traveling. I love learning about other cultures. I love the foods in other countries. And I just, if I wasn't an engineer, I'd probably just travel around the world.
I believe you are one of those few people who have already and have been in the seven wonders of the world. What do you think about the electronics are going to be in future?
So Muhammad, that's a very, very interesting question, very good question. Well, let me just comment on the traveling that one of my, the best trip that I ever made was I visited the gorillas in the wild in Rwanda. And I was 20 feet away from Silverback and his family. And that was probably the most mind-changing thing that I've ever done. So again, I really like traveling. In terms of electronics, I mean, it's all what everybody always says is it's IoT. You know, everything is going to have electronics in it. I think, you know, there are a number of bottlenecks to cross there. You know, one of them obviously is power. You know, how do you get, you know, make sure that they get power? But people are starting to solve that problem with energy harvesting of various types. And so I'm really convinced that electronics being inside of everything and the IoT is going to be huge. You know, it's going to be woven into your clothes. It's going to be it's what everybody talks about. But on top of that, it's what the huge, you know, advances, as you well know, in AI. I'm really looking forward to when AI really makes big advances over the next few years. I've been reading books about the dangers of AI, but I know that there are going to be huge advantages to having AI interpret all of the data coming from all of our IoT devices and, you know, doing the contextual awareness kind of things, which is already starting to happen a little bit. It's kind of fun to watch. So in my career, in my life, I've sort of, you know, when I was a kid, our phone was one of those phones where you ask the operator to hook you up to number, you know, 92345. And now, you know, I have a cell phone that I carry with me every day that I connect to everything in the world. So it's the advances that have been made are just enormous and hugely impactful. And in improving our lives, not only being just useful and convenient, but improving our lives, making us more knowledgeable, making us more aware of what's going on in the world, making the world so much smaller and having huge, allowing people to be hugely, or allowing countries to be hugely dependent on each other, which I think is a really, really good thing. So I'm just really excited about how electronics is making the world a smaller place and making the world a happier place.
Right. When I used to work on like my PhD and the follow-up work in Texas Instruments, they were on high chemical gate FinFET. So basically that was the peak time, it came to the market, fine. And then when I moved to academia, I started using silicon, micromachining, microfabrication, but to have all these electronics in their physically flexible format. So I said that we cannot lose the performance because I can use an exotic material, but I don't get the performance because everywhere there is data integration. So it is obvious, as you say, like IoT, if we can make tech, which we can wear, which we can just like on any things, we just stick it and then that thing becomes intelligent. And obviously at some point, I do believe that there will be AI integration there. So we do have a program in Berkeley. I have, I call it the Ubiquitous AI. So essentially making these kind of tags with AI integration so that you stick it, that thing becomes intelligent or smart. So it's obviously a fantastic vision. So from that perspective, there are so many new application areas are now opening up, especially in the healthcare related, right? There is also robotics. There is all sort of robotics, including not only the robotics which look like human or act like a dog, but like, you know, the UAV and other self-driven cars. Is there any particular application that you'd love to see it?
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to robots. I've really always been fascinated with robots. And I think we're in a stage now where we're in a period of time where, very intelligent and versatile robots that can walk around, you know, like the Boston, is it Boston Dynamics? Like those kind of, they're going to be, you know, 20 years from now, I think they're going to be just incredibly common. And they're going to be very intelligent. And I'm really looking forward to that. I think one of the great things about robots as a science is it's a huge multidisciplinary issue. It's got sensors involved. It's got heavy duty actuators. It's how do you handle the power? It's got all the electronics. So it's this huge electromechanical, you know, if you will, problem that that is fascinating to work on. And I think if I were starting my career now, I would very likely move toward robotics. And I think it's going to be a very exciting area.
I am pretty sure that one of your next ventures will be focusing on that part, right? Like, you know, the person like you will never run out of ideas and never will run out of your passion. There is no doubt about that. One piece of advice you would like to share for the younger generation?
Okay. One of the things that I think is really important, if you believe in your ideas, is just be persistent. Just be persistent. I think, you know, as a angel investor nowadays, I'm looking a lot at startup companies. And the ones that I get most attracted to are ones where the founders are, they have a vision and they're persistent in terms of making it happen. Because when you're starting a company, when you're being an entrepreneur, there's going to be many people who are going to be skeptical of your idea. And they're going to have some kind of objection to your idea. But if you are really believing in it and you really continue to pursue it, you know, you're going to be successful. So when we started SciTime, which is making the silicon MEMS oscillators to replace the quartz crystal, most of the VCs we talked to was like, wow, that's kind of a crazy idea. You know, how can that be successful? And also there were huge problems. It was because silicon, as you know, has a huge temperature coefficient. So it's like 32 parts per degree C is what the modulus of elasticity changes. And basically clocks have to be accurate within parts per billion over 100 degrees C. So how are you going to solve that huge problem? So, but we persisted and we found ways to solve that problem. We found ways to solve the other problems. And now SciTime has shipped over 2 billion MEMS oscillators. And they're on the huge uptick of that famous hockey stick curve of, you know, impacting a $6 billion quartz crystal industry. So I would say, persistence, you know, if you believe in a problem and you think you can solve the problem, just be persistent, even in the face of a lot of detractors and negative people. So that's one piece of advice I would give. Second, though, there's another very, very important part, and that is surround yourself with the best people you know, the smartest and the best people and the hardest working people you know. And keep those people close, take their advice. You know, if you have a company, you know, I like to hire people and then say, just go do it. And then I just walk away, you know, just go do it, you know, and have faith in people and trust in people. So the team in a startup company for me is the most important and exciting part, is putting together that team and then letting the team go do their work.
Right. It's, the one of the natural sign of a solid, competent leadership is how the leader is forming and rallying his or her team, because it's, you know, after he or she lays down the vision, inspires the beneficiaries in the sense. Then it's the time just to actually assemble the right team, right resources, right? And then unleash them, right? So because creativity fosters, there are so many different things and they just make it happen, right? Organically, no need to do micromanaging, nano engineering, nothing. It will be taken care of. Just to make sure that they're appropriately in a just manner, that when they feel that, you know, when I feel tired, this person is always there with me. He or she might not be working exactly the same way. That itself always works. It doesn't matter which position I'm holding, academic, entrepreneur, the head of the states, whatever we can say. In 2011, Dr. Peterson joined the Silicon Valley Band of Angels, where he now co-chairs the Heart Tech Group. The band is an angel investment group which mentors and invests in early stage high-tech startup companies. Today, he spends most of his time helping and mentoring such companies. Dr. Peterson has published over 100 papers and he has been granted over 35 patents in the field of MEMS. He was awarded the prestigious IEEE Medal of Honor in 2019, as well as the IEEE Simon Remo Medal in 2001 for his contributions to MEMS. Dr. Peterson is a member of the United States National Academy of Engineering and is a Life Fellow of the IEEE in recognition of his contributions to the commercialization of MEMS technology. Okay, Kurt, this round, I will be actually switching. This is our last round, and I will be switching to a little bit of lighthearted questions because we wanted to actually give a glimpse of Kurt Peterson as a person to our audience. And that's why it's kind of like rapid fire, if possible, if you can pick a short answer with like, you know, one word, but you know, no restriction, no limitation. Okay, just enjoy. Hey, what are your hobbies?
Traveling, reading. I read a lot, and before the pandemic, I traveled a lot.
Right. Well, many of us. I was driving back from San Francisco, and Airbnb has put together an ad. We miss traveling too. Yeah, that's right. Okay, music or movie? Which one you enjoy more?
I really enjoy movies. I have a large number of DVDs and Blu-rays, and I'd say my favorite movie is of all time is probably Blade Runner.
Definitely. So that's the Wesley Snipes version, right? Because after that, Harrison Ford and Ryan Gosling had one too. Okay. That's a wonderful series, actually. It blends science fiction in a very different way. Great. What is the book you're reading now?
So I'm reading a book by, I like Dean Koontz. So I really like that, but I have a huge variety of different books I like to read. I especially read cosmology books and AI books. I mentioned that earlier, and also early human history. There's Leonard Schlein, who is one of my favorite authors. Also Richard Dawkins. I really like Richard Dawkins. So I have science fiction, mystery, cosmology, science, and the history of science.
Yeah, you know, in context of reading, the more the merrier, always. You said you love food, different kind of food. So let's say, which one is your favorite? Which is Thai?
So my wife is Chinese, so... Okay. And she loves to cook, and she used to own a Chinese restaurant for many years. She had a Chinese restaurant in Fremont. And it was the best Chinese food in the Bay Area, I thought. But now she just loves to cook everything. So she cooks Mexican food, she cooks chili, okay. She makes a wonderful steak, she cooks Italian food, as well as Chinese food. So of the food that I like, I like my wife's food.
It's very good. Me too.
Very, very good chef. Yeah.
My wife is a civil engineer, but and specialty in environmental engineering, but she is deeply passionate about fusion cooking. Any sports you enjoy?
I used to ski when I was younger, and okay. I really enjoyed skiing. Not too many other sports. I used to play soccer, of course. But I think skiing was kind of my real passion when I was younger, but I haven't skied in a few years.
Okay. Well, I think in USA, you have to go to Utah and Colorado to do proper skiing, unlike in Europe, where you can do a lot of skiing. So all these places that you have traveled around the world, is there any destination that is your top favorite?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mentioned the gorillas, and sort of that was my all-time favorite. But we love Thailand. We like okay. to go to Thailand. I've been to Machu Picchu twice, actually.
Right. And I've seen that.
I love that. I like China. You know, we've traveled quite a bit in China. And I also, actually, I really enjoy Japan. So I've been to Japan, right. I don't know how many times. And of course I've been all over Europe. I've been to Morocco. It's, you know, Egypt, it's all, you know, it's all wonderful. You've seen different cultures. It's just amazing. The diversity of humanity, I guess I'll say. It's
right. Right. It's mystical. The other day I was talking to, Eric Fossum of Dartmouth CMOS image sensor. And he's actually exactly like yours. Both of you have the same that the wildlife. So I'm done with my the list of formal questionnaires. This is the one that I am asking everyone from myself. And that is, was there anything that I should have asked you, but I didn't? So please go ahead, whatever you want to say.
So... Okay, that's a good question. I guess about my family. So I'm really proud of my sons. One of my sons is an MD at the CDC. So actually, he's been involved in the COVID crisis. He has three of my grandsons in Atlanta. And so I'm very proud of him. My other son is a software guru at Adobe. He's been at Adobe Microsystems for 25 years or so. He was in charge of the PDF team there for a number of years. And I really enjoy spending time with my grandsons. But my son who works here locally, his kids go to school in Palo Alto. And usually once a week, I would stop by their school during their lunch recess and just hang around with them. So yeah, I'm really into my family, and I really am very proud of them.
Well, those know you very intimately, and they actually know about this. And I would say that I'm sure that you're going to start a robotics club with your grandkids and their friends and their buddies soon enough. Because that's exactly where they are going to be the one who are going to build it, optimize it, and will enhance its impact furthermore. As you say, 20 to 25 years from today, these are going to be our daily life components, like our smartphone.
Okay. Mama, that's just a terrific idea. I love that idea.
Thank you so much. And, you know, every time you were talking about the electronic sensing as well as the mechanical part, this immediately reminded me that our tongue is quite interesting, right? When we eat, it tastes. So it has the chemical sensing. And at the same time, when we talk, it acts as a mechanical lever. So I'm pretty sure that, like, you know, that there will be new design innovation where the mechanical, electronic, biological application, all these will get together, nature inspired. One single footprint device can do many things, sensing, actuation, and integration of the data. I would say that's quite easy in the sense because the way the CMOS technology has advanced. So I'm looking forward to that future. I always say that we still have the next best 40 years for electronics.
I totally agree with that. I think the best is yet to come. It's going to be a very, very exciting future.
Thank you for attending this IEEE EDS-sponsored podcast. To listen to other EDS podcasts, as well as benefits and resources EDS offers, please go to the website eds.ieee.org. Thank you for listening.